Good evening and welcome to another episode of Deeper Into the Word as we continue our series on the house that Jesus built. This evening we're going to be examining the area of evangelism and the local church, and we're delighted to have Max Stiles with us this evening.
Well, it's really great to have Max Stiles join us for this episode of Deeper Into the Word. Tell us a little bit about yourself for those who don't know you. You were at Hamilton Road Baptist a couple of years ago and Bangor were watched, but tell us just a little bit about who you are and where you are currently.
Well, Keith, first of all, thanks for having me. It's a joy to be able to share with brothers and sisters around the world about sharing their faith. Yeah, my time at the church there was delightful. And my whole family joined us. We have my wife and I flew in from Iraq, where I was pastoring a church in Erbil. And then my sons and daughter-in-laws and grandchildren flew in from the States. And we had a wonderful time ministering during worldwide. And then also we stayed over for a week or so. So yeah, but that's my family. We're kind of a global family. My kids grew up in Dubai, where Leanne and I ministered for 16 years and developed student ministry there through IFES. And then the last 4 years, we were up in Iraq pastoring the church. Children are grown now back home, having grandchildren, and which is wonderful. And we have migrated back out of Iraq, back to the States now, where we're living in Louisville, Kentucky. So I've started a new ministry here called Messenger Ministries. It's a sort of a mission agency. COVID has set us back a little. It seems like a lot of missionaries are going the wrong way. they're going home, not going overseas. But at any rate, we'll get going here in the next year or two. So that's kind of our situation.
Yeah, great. No, and it's been really great just over the years to have heard and to read some of what you have produced. Yeah. We're going to be talking about evangelism this evening. Who shared the gospel with you and how did you come to faith?
Yeah, I was a pagan, pursuing the pleasures of the world. I was 16 years old. I was in Zermatt, Switzerland, at a skiing and mountain climbing school. I wanted to go to the Olympics. I wanted to race. I was not near good enough, but that was my dream as a 16-year-old. And I was at a race camp in Zermatt during the summer. And there was a kid there who shared the gospel with me. His name was Robert. He was my age. He looking back on it, I realized now he was a young believer himself. He had only recently come to faith. And as are many young believers, you know, he's fired up and wanted to tell people about it. I actually asked him, you know, there's a big party culture around ski racing. And so we would, you know, these teenagers set loose in Switzerland, we would hit the bars at night. And I asked him one day, I noticed that he wasn't drinking. And I asked him, well, how come you don't go to hit the bars with us and get drunk, essentially? I don't know exactly the words I use, but something like that. And he said, you know, well, it's not like you don't look like you're having fun sometimes. Sometimes you seem like you're enjoying yourself, but you know, what I have in my life, I'd never want to trade for what I could get out of a bottle. And I mean, he was talking about Jesus, but it was so compelling to me. I said, I want to know what that is. You know, tell me about that. He shared the gospel with me. I'd never heard it before. Now, I'd gone to church, but I'd never heard the gospel. Maybe that was my hard heart. Maybe the church didn't preach the gospel. I don't know. But I bent my knee to Christ, repented of my sin in a dirty hostel in Zermatt, Switzerland, over a bar in 1972. So, that's how I came to faith. And you know, isn't it amazing how these little hinges make such big swings in the doors of our lives? I'm so grateful that this kid took the time to explain the gospel to me and answer my questions and lead me to faith.
Well, that's amazing to hear. And just even on holiday, you know, yeah, it can happen anywhere. And, crazy. You know, tell us then about your early experiences of evangelism, share.
Well, yeah.
Or seeing others do evangelism.
Yeah, my early experiences in evangelism were not the best model. But I do say at least awkward is better than silence, you know? So I was kind of a house of fire. I mean, to start off with, I thought we just needed to tell everybody and, you know, they'd come to Jesus. I was shocked to find out that was not the case. Starting with my family, who thought I'd just gone bonkers. But I will say that I saw my sisters come to faith and eventually my parents. So the whole family came to the Lord, but it was not because of my initial, it was very off-putting, you know. In fact, I was reading through the book of Deuteronomy. I didn't know better. I just thought I'd start at the beginning. Started reading Genesis, went through, and mom served up a roast pork for lunch. And I told her I wasn't eating pork anymore. I don't do that. I'm a Christian. My sisters loved it. They thought they'd found a way out of not eating what they wanted to through religion. But yeah, so, but eventually over time, as I grew in the Lord, I found a good youth group. I joined a Baptist church in my hometown, was baptized at that church. I was discipled by some other believers in that fellowship and grew in the Lord, and evangelism grew. You know, you grow in evangelism. There's a learning curve to it. And the important thing is to do it as opposed to, now we're going to talk a little bit about what if you get it wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm an expert on that. So I'm happy to talk about it, but yeah, so that's kind of initial steps in evangelism.
No, great. And you have written a little book called Evangelism, how the whole church speaks of Jesus. And
yeah,
lots of our conversations are going to be based on this, and copies are going to be available for people to buy. But you give a really good definition of evangelism, because it can be confusing in our world where people have put all sorts of definitions to words that may or may not be true. So as we talk about evangelism, your definition is evangelism is teaching the gospel with the aim to persuade. Evangelism is teaching the gospel with the aim to persuade. Could you just expand on that for us?
Yeah, sure. Well, Keith, I'm so glad you picked that out, actually. I think that's one of the few original things in the book. Everything else I just borrowed from other people, including part of that definition, which is really from J.I. Packer, who in Evangelism and the Sovereignty of God talks about how Paul's basic method of evangelism was a teaching method. And part of the reason that's so important is you must know the gospel to be able to teach it. So a lot of times people aren't able to teach the gospel because they don't really know it. But I like it because of what it's not. It's not manipulation. It's not apologetics. It's not necessarily giving a testimony. It's not necessarily walking an aisle or raising a hand. I mean, people come to faith through those things, but that's not particularly evangelism. Evangelism must be the articulation of, or the teaching of the gospel. And it's not just a data dump. We're not just dumping on people information, but we're trying to persuade them. And I get that from Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, where he says, we persuade men. So those are important. It's an important definition, I think. The embarrassing part is it took me 30 years to come up with it, but at least it's out there now. So,
no, yeah. Well, I'm glad that you did take 30 years to do it, and you've clearly read a lot on evangelism, and you've clearly experienced a lot on it, and you've honed and developed this as well. When I think of evangelism, and when others possibly do too, quite often I consider it as a personal activity. So personal evangelism, or somebody said, it's one beggar showing another beggar where to find food. And even your friend in Switzerland, you know, he was doing that. But in the book, your subtitle is How the Whole Church Speaks of Jesus.
Right.
So is it is evangelism just big church events?
Yeah, so, well, big church events, I think, can deaden personal event. So let me start with personal evangelism. I'm for personal evangelism. And I've written a book on it called Speaking of Jesus, on personal evangelism. And we must practice it. But I think what often happens is we forget that Jesus makes sure that the gospel is made visible in the context of a true gospel church, and that our best evangelistic tool is the church. When people hear the gospel in baptisms, when they hear the gospel in communion, when they hear the gospel in song, when they hear the gospel prayed, when they hear the gospel read in scripture, and especially when they hear the gospel preached from a pulpit, that the gospel, a gospel-centered church will make sure that if a non-Christian friend comes to church, they're going to hear the gospel, or at least it's going to be presented. Their ears may be closed, but at least it's that ongoing presentation of the gospel. And it's if the church is doing what the church is supposed to do, which is love one another so that all men will know that we're Jesus's disciples. And if we're unified so that all men will know that Jesus is from the Father, we're confirming our discipleship and Christ's divinity. So that's the promise of Jesus. In John, well, you know, it's in the start of John 13 in his upper room discourse, ends the upper room discourse with the part of unity in chapter 17. So we have this promise from Jesus that our community, our love for one another, our unity as a body will be a powerful witness to him. And I think we miss that often. So I say it like this. Evangelistic programs and evangelistic activities are church events are fine. I do them. I take part in them. But too many of them, too many church evangelistic outreaches, is a bit like sugar to nutrition. I mean, we need some sugar, but too much of it kills us. And the thing about sugar is that you can eat it and it makes you feel like you've had food when you haven't. The same is true for evangelistic events and outreaches. Often, we're not doing evangelism. We're just going to a program. We're not actually sitting down with someone and sharing the gospel. And if you don't share the gospel, you lose it. You get rusty. It atrophies in our spiritual lives. On the other hand, when we're sharing our faith, it is tremendously revitalizing for the church. I mean, there's nothing so exciting as people coming to faith and sharing about their newfound faith in Christ because of the efforts of some church members. I go to Third Avenue Baptist Church with Greg Gilbert, who wrote the book, Who is Jesus? And there's this real awkward kid who's been sharing about his friend who has his name is Elvis, of all things. He's been sharing about Elvis. And so the church has been praying for him. And then last week, he tells Elvis has come to faith. And the church just rejoiced because we thought that, you know, this kid, he's awkward and, you know, he's stumbling around and he doesn't know what he's doing and he's a brand new believer. And yet through the prayers of the congregation, this kid's inviting folks into this guy's life. He's come to faith. So it's, you know, so exciting for the church, revitalizing. It's invigorating for the church when you're having new believers come to faith through evangelistic efforts of church members. So,
yeah. Because I think what can so often happen is that we do these big evangelistic programs and events, and it's really just Christians who come.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're saying actually bring your non-Christian friends to just Sunday morning
just
church?
Regular church, sit down with them, help walk them through. If they don't understand or it's an odd thing to them, if church is weird, you know, you help explain, take them out to lunch, explain what's going on, explain why the church does things. you know, take criticism well, you know. Yeah, so I think if you have, as you do in your church, Keith, your church, I was there for a service. Your church is so good about making sure that non-Christians are addressed from the front, that the gospel is clear and clearly presented, and the challenge is given for people to follow Christ. So I would encourage the church to remember that the church in and of itself is as powerful or maybe equally powerful to personal evangelism.
No, that's very helpful, because I know I've been neglectful of asking people to come to church services. So it's something that's on my radar once again. And
just by the way, I keep talking about church. So I was in London and I was speaking at Christ Church Bromley, Ian Bloomfield's church. They're a wonderful church, very evangelistic. And they were trying to put together a program where people would strike up conversations on the tube in their commute in and out of Bloomfield. And I'm an American and I don't ride the tube, but I know that's weird. You know, nobody talks to anybody on the tube, you know? I mean, that's just, I know that. And so I was like, you guys, but I was here at your service and there were so many non-Christians here. Let's go for low-hanging fruit. You know, strike up conversations with people in church first. I mean, they've come to church and there's must be some spiritual interest or, I got lots of stories, Keith, so you can just stop me at these points, but Leanne and I have a friendship with Tom and Gilly at our church, and great couple. He's not a believer. She's a very strong believer. And, we've had them over for dinner. We've talked to them about the Lord. But one day after a particularly powerful sermon by Greg Gilbert, I went up to Tom after the service, everybody's milling about. I thought, Tom, you got to talk to me about this. You got all these Christian friends. Your wife is a Christian. You come to church. You hear a sermon like this. I just wonder what that means to you spiritually. In your life, I mean, are you thinking about it? And he looked a little, honestly, he looked a little offended. I thought, oh great, I've offended a non-Christian. He kind of mumbled something about it, and then we got interrupted. The conversation went nowhere. I was like, another fail. 99% of all my evangelistic efforts are fail, just fail. But then because. Well, Tom and Gilly wrote home. They had a conversation. Gilly reported to me back later that Tom was very agitated and wanted to know why I'd ask him that question. And Gilly said, because Mac's concerned about your soul. He thinks you're going to hell. Now, I don't know if that's a good response, but, you know, they're married. So she can say that they have a good marriage. But then she told me, and here's the kicker. She told me he's been coming to church for years and no one has asked him about his spiritual life. You know, that's not right. Here's this guy in church. And, now he didn't come back to church for a long time. So I wish I had, you know, I wish I had some great story about him coming to faith, which has not happened, but it's just more to illustrate the point. There's people in our congregations that we should be on game for, you know, we're thinking about it. We're not just trying to connect with friends or, you know, if we see a friend who's brought a non-Christian, making sure to introduce ourselves to them and talk to them and invite them back. Simple things.
Yeah, no, I think it's just to be normal around people and just to be,
yeah.
But to be intentional. And that's right throughout your Brooklyn evangelism. But tell us, what happens if we get evangelism wrong as a church? So what happens to Hamlin Road Baptist Church, to Third Avenue Baptist Church?
Yeah, well, we die. If the biggest problem in evangelism, at least from my perspective, is that we don't do it. We stop. And if you do that, you die. You're no longer alive spiritually. I mean, you might be saved, but if we're not sharing our faith, evangelism was one of the keys to spiritual health. And that's why I encourage people to have evangelism as a spiritual discipline, just that we're making sure that we understand to share our faith is important for our own spiritual well-being. And that it needs to be on our mind and in our prayers. We need to be intentional. So a lot of times I think people think about getting evangelism wrong in terms of doing it wrong, but awkward is better than silent. Most of my attempts are fails. I learn from them, but most of them don't go anywhere. So I think one of the big problems is that we think only in terms of conversions rather than just being faithful. I think the call in evangelism is to be faithful in sharing our faith, not to win souls to Christ. Although we want to see people come to faith, and it's a joy when we are given the privilege of leading someone to the Lord. It's not the end goal in the Lord's mind. I think there's a lot of ways we can get things wrong in our heads about evangelism. And then we can do wrong things. We can manipulate. We can think we're doing evangelism when we're not by, winning an argument. Is that what you're getting at, Keith? Tell me more about.
Yeah, I think in your book you talk about sort of the church becomes very nominal.
And yes.
Non-Christians become members, and then non-Christians even become leaders, and the church ultimately, as you say, as individual believers die, the church dies.
Our streets are filled with the empty shells of churches, and it's so sad. As I walk around America or Europe and see these churches turned into condominiums and restaurants, I just think that is a testimony. It's a testimony to people who assumed the gospel, then twisted the gospel, and then lost the gospel.
Yeah, no, it's a real warning, and particularly even in our country here, it's happening all over. As you encourage,
but, you know what? In Iraq, we live up in close to Syria, the Syrian border, where the Erbil is kind of sandwiched in between Iran and Syria and Turkey. And, there's hundreds of churches there, but they're just what I call legacy churches. Long ago, the lampstands were removed a long time ago from those churches. They've long forgotten the gospel, and they've become social clubs and actually social cities. I mean, there's Chaldean and Assyrian churches. And that's, of course, where Christianity started up there, in a lot of ways, in Syria and further west. But it's astonishing to me to think these buildings are still there. But sadly, it's a Muslim country.
Yeah, no, it's a real warning to us all, however healthy our churches are currently, that it could be a monument to 21st century evangelicalism in 40 or 50 years time if we do forget the gospel and forget the spirit.
Yeah.
But your book and a lot of what you say is really to help the church to think through, right, how can we create a culture of evangelism rather than just saying, right, go out and be personal evangelism. It's this culture of evangelism. How is a local church in Hamilton Road or others watching on, how can we develop and foster that? You do give us 10 points in your book, but just give us a few of the highlights.
That's just a tithe. I mean, because I don't say this, well, maybe I do say this in the book, but I think one of the most important things to do is be a healthy church, be a gospel-centered, Bible-drenched community of genuine believers, committed, born-again Christians who are loving one another and practicing the ordinances of baptism and communion with a passion and understanding of what that's about. where the right preaching happens on a regular basis. Those kind of things. Being a healthy church is the most critical thing. And alongside of that are those 10 points of evangelist, critical evangelism. So, I mean, you can help me if you have a list, but I'll give you what I consider to be some of the top things to do, which is to know the gospel. Every member of the church should not be able to know and articulate the gospel. And then you need to be able to speak the gospel. It's not just living a good life. If you just live a good life, you know, people think you're good, not Jesus. You've got to talk about what Christ has done for you. And then you need to live it out. Your life, what you say, needs to look in parallel with your life. And of course, that's Galatians 1 or 2:14, where Paul said that, you know, their conduct, essentially he's talking about Peter, but their conduct needs to walk in line with the gospel. Those three things go together: to know the gospel, to speak the gospel, and to live the gospel, live like it's real. One of the reasons my children came to faith, we didn't know this till they were older. But when my son has become an elder at Third, and he's actually a chairman of the elders right now, I'm very proud of him. But when he gave his talk about eldership to the congregation, he said, one of the reasons Christianity meant something to me and why I considered it so strongly was that it was clear my parents lived like this man Jesus actually rose from the dead. And I loved that. I didn't know that. I didn't know that was true. I was glad he saw it that way. That's what we want in our churches. We want people to see us and say their lives don't make any sense apart from Jesus rising from the dead. So we need to understand biblical conversion. I think we've got to, this is true in Baptist circles, especially in the South, where it's been kind of an easy conversion, just raising a hand, walking an aisle, saying a prayer. I know people do come to faith that way, but as old campus minister, as someone who, I spent 25 years in campus ministry, how many university students I would hear whose testimony was essentially, well, I came to Jesus when I was 4, I was baptized when I was 5, but then I fell away, and it wasn't until I got to college and really understood the gospel that I rededicated my life. I've always thought, I don't think maybe that's true, maybe they rededicated their life, but I think that's when they came to faith. And this confusion over biblical conversion is killing the church, honestly. Michael Lawrence has written a book on conversion. By the way, Keith, I would recommend you interviewing Michael Lawrence. He's a dear friend on that topic. He would do a great job for you on it. But then becoming a loving community, making sure that's in place. I think one of the most important witnesses is the loving community in the world today. It's searching for that. We're so polarized. We're increasingly polarized. Seeing as spiritual disciplines, so spiritual leadership and evangelism. We could talk more about that. I think you've got.
Yeah, no, that's been very helpful. And in these days of COVID and lockdowns, and people are seeing the needs locally and globally, I have lots of ideas of how we could be reaching people. Church members have lots of ideas, but they're saying, Keith, I really think the church should be doing this and this and this and this. Can you help me?
Good for them. I'm glad they see it.
Yeah. What should I be doing as a pastor evangelistically?
The first thing is share the gospel yourself. You'd be sharing the gospel yourself and telling people about how you've attempted to share the gospel. Especially your fails. the times you blow it are so encouraging in a congregation. So I was, we were on this family ski trip to Montana, and we landed in the Denver airport, and it was me and Leanne, and we go to a burger place, Smash Burger, and I look down a couple tables from us, and there is sitting Lance Armstrong. You know, the bicycle, he's by himself. And I think I can't let this go. You know, I got to talk to him. He's, you know, he's just sitting there. And so I kind of screw up my courage, and I walk down to his table. Leanne thinks I'm nuts. But I said, "Are you Lance Armstrong?" And he said, "I am." Kind of like, "Don't hurt me." And I said, "Oh, I just wanted to tell you that I was in Paris. I think it was in 2004, and I saw you in the yellow jersey and crossed the finish line, and they locked down the Champs-Élysées, and we were able to walk around under the Arc de Triomphe, and saw you from the platform with my children, and they just loved it. It was a special moment for us as a family." And he said, this really undone, I was undone by this. He said, "Oh, how are your kids doing? Are they okay? I really messed up. Now, the truth of the matter is, we didn't even know the Tour de France was going on. we were on one of those cheap flights back from Dubai onto America. And, you know, 15-hour layover, we're all jet lagged. And we just went to the Louvre, you know, just to see, you know, the art. We walk out of the Louvre. There goes Lance Armstrong. I pull out my camera. I take a picture of him crossing the finish line. You know, so I was just looking for a point of contact. That's all. And so I didn't explain all that, but I suddenly realized he's worried about my kids because of his sin. And I blew it. I just blew it. I had this great opportunity. There's so many things I could have done at that point. I mumbled out something about how I'm a Christian and I'm a missionary in Iraq, and I believe Jesus offers second chances to those who'll take him up on it. And that was it. And I walked away. I know God can use that. And, you know, I'm not beating myself up over that. I'm just saying, often I blow it in evangelistic. I don't know why I didn't do more. I mean, I am the best post-evangelist in the world. All the things I could have done for Lance, you know, I could have given him a copy of my book. I could have given them that. I could have given him my email. So let's talk more, my phone number, or, you know, I could have sat down at the table and said, "Let me tell you the gospel. You know, I mean, let me tell you how to find forgiveness," or, you know, I just blew it. But sharing that story with our congregation has been really helpful for people. So if you know, Keith, I'd recommend you and Johnny and everyone to share stories of sharing the faith. Many of your opportunities come from the pulpit, of course, and those conversations at church. So I would open up opportunities for people to share about sharing. So at a prayer meeting, it ought to be number one on the agenda item. Hey, anybody here talking with a non-Christian neighbor, I want you to share, or maybe set some people up that are, as you hear stories of them. Ask people to tell you about their evangelistic conversations so we can pray for you. You know, I mean, that kind of thing. And champion evangelists, even if they're awkward. International evangelists, you know, people are sharing their faith with international students or tourists or people that are coming to Bangor. I mean, I'm just spinning out ideas. But giving space to make sure that evangelism and evangelists are championed in the church and not just left to the pastoral staff, I think is really helpful.
Yeah, no, and I'll just say there's a couple in our church, Claire and Dave Castles. During COVID, Claire's a bit of a runner and cold sea swimmer. Began a friendship with a girl, shared her faith, shared the hope that was within her. Her friend came to Christ.
Wow, praise the Lord.
She was baptized in the sea. Yeah. Her friend's husband then began reading the Bible with Claire's husband, Dave. Came on Christianity Explored course, gave his life to Christ on a Sunday at Ballywalter, you know, continuing awesome. To read the Bible one to one. So I think there's a couple in our church quietly just living their lives in a community and sharing faith and seeing God at work.
Does the church know about these stories? Is that being shared?
They do now. Anybody who's watched this.
Right.
Yeah. But, we did interview Fu Claire about her friend, and then I just shared about Joe coming to faith at our Zoom prayer gathering. So yes, the church is aware, but I think we can do a better job of, because I'm sure in our church that there's more Dave and Claire's out there, but I just don't
know. Oh, I bet. Oh, I'm sure.
So going on, and as we've come to a close, if people are watching and going, right, I really want to share my faith, you know, who can I go and see tomorrow? who can I call? They seek to want to become intentional evangelists. Any other ways just to encourage them in that?
I think one of the keys, and this is one of the 10 things in the book, is be bold and clear with the gospel. Intentionality is so important. I'm an extrovert. I love meeting people and talking. My wife is terribly introverted. She's very quiet. And she's a more effective evangelist, I think. So she is so thoughtful to think through questions that she wants to ask people who are non-Christians, and she prays about it. And she, you know, it's just wonderful to see how fruitful she's been in sharing her faith, because she's so intentional. It's not about personalities. I mean, it's helpful at times to it's helpful to like people. That is helpful. But by and large, it has more to do with taking those risky steps. Some of the most important things we can do in evangelism is to take more risks. And I would encourage people to do that, regardless of the outcome. You may feel a little foolish, but hey, you know, you're not going to go to jail. Not yet. Like people do in Iraq or Dubai. That's one of the joys for us, is to realize, you know, hey, we can share our faith. And so far, the worst we get usually is a raised eyebrow. I'd say be bold and clear, be intentional, take risks.
You know, that's helpful again. So just as we conclude, any final words of people watching on about actually speaking about Jesus? Any words of the church members here? Any words of Johnny and I as pastors, or to the elders here?
Well, be encouraged. I think you guys are doing great. I love the church. I've just jumped at the chance of being with you again through Zoom. And I look to Christ, pray for opportunities. You know, it's a prayer I've found in my own life that Jesus loves to answer. Oh God, lead someone to me that needs to hear about your saving love. I commend that to you and the church staff and the congregation.
Yeah. No, well, thank you for all of your time. Thank you for the partnership that we've been able to keep up over the past few years. And we do hope that you'll be back in Bangor at some point.
At any point, yeah.
I think let's work towards seeing something happen as vaccines happen, as travel happens a bit more. It'd be great to connect again. So thanks for your time, and God bless you in your ongoing work.
Well, I'm sure you've all been challenged by that this evening. Can I encourage you to read some of the books that Mac has written, and you can pick those up at the Evangelical Bookshop. But even more than that, can I encourage you to share Christ this week for somebody that you encounter? Do continue to join us on Deeper Into the Words. We'll continue this really important series on the house that Jesus built. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Deeper Into the Word. We hope and pray it has been a blessing to you. To access more teaching from Hamilton Road Baptist, please visit our Facebook page and YouTube at Hamilton Road Baptist.